This is Pure Decking show number 283 for Thursday. What the hell is today? November something. November 2nd, the current year. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out how rigged the game is, and building my robot army from parts I found on eBay. I'm Morps, and tonight we have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Newcastle Brown Ale. I'm eating caramel-filled M&Ms.
Fancy. Actually, I was drinking Newcastle earlier tonight, so. And we have BSV. BSV, what are you drinking?
Unfortunately, I just have flavored sugar water.
Well.
Ghetto-ass flavored sugar water?
No, just regular.
Yeah, he didn't get the water from Detroit.
No, it's twice the amount of sugar. That's how you make ghetto Kool-Aid, dude.
So
it's like syrup.
Oh, I just that was.
I prefer to have more than just sugar in my drink.
There's grape in it too. Sugar and grape. All you need.
That's not grape. That's purple.
Oh, sugar and purple. I'm sorry. I stand corrected.
So, what flavor is that? Purple. So. And I am actually drinking Jim Beam Rye tonight. So, Faygo. Detroit-flavored sugar water is Faygo. You sure it's not Gibson? That's not what that's called.
Faygo's an off-brand soda, I think, that tastes like bubblegum no matter what you buy.
Jenkins, that's what I was thinking, not Gibson. Gibson's
oh,
a rock.
God,
Jenkins.
No. Jenkins is horrible. I mean, I have to applaud ingenuity, but it's no. Something should not be invented.
It's no?
It's just no. Is that from personal experience or just the concept?
Just the concept. I'm not going to vomit up and have my mouth taste like raw sewage for a week, just because I'm going to have a wonderfully high euphoric hallucination for 15 minutes. No, the benefits do not outweigh the cost.
So.
I don't think I want to know what's.
No, you really don't. Google it sometime. I mean, I'm certain Madman could recite the recipe for us on air, but I'd rather not spread that information. So. It's pretty gross, and we'd spend the rest of the evening talking about that instead of the stories here. So,
oh yeah, that'd be terrible.
Let's just move on. Not a Fox News myth. Well, you know, nobody's actually had the balls to do the experiment. So, we're not going to find out if that one's real or not. I don't care how many YouTube views you would get.
Drugs, Inc., I think, discussed it.
So.
The Discovery Channel also.
Anyways. So the first article here is actually from the Register. U.S. Deputy Attorney General has told business leaders that Uncle Sam will not demand mandatory backdoors encryption so long as the companies can cough up unencrypted copy of every message, call, photo, or other form of communication they handle. Speaking at the 2017 North American International Cyber Summit in Detroit on Monday, maybe this guy was doing the Jenkins, Deputy Attorney General Rob Reinstein appeared to shift tack on his earlier position that end-to-end encryption systems, such as instant messenger and video call apps, should grant special access exclusively to crime investigators on demand. Again, demonstrating that he doesn't understand why people don't want to do that. There's no guarantee that it will just be investigators and people with warrants. Let's see. Tech giants are resisting weakening their strong end-to-end file system crypto just to help the cops, and feds arbitrarily decipher suspects' messages and files on devices. So Rosenstein has another approach. Let people send encrypted as normal, but a plain text copy of everything from communications to files on devices must be retained in an unencrypted form for investigators to delve into as needed. See, this guy's just having a wet dream. It's like, oh, okay, well, if you can't give us access to the encryption, you just have to give us everything that's on the device. No.
But it's encrypted. How am I going to do that?
There is not... I am not aware of anything that creates a legal duty on the part of a company that manufactures a software or hardware device to provide arbitrary access to anything the government asks for. I mean, I'm all for, you know, taking care of actual criminals who need to be taken care of, but I don't like this, we can peer into everything, we control everything, you have to provide it on demand. This whole concept completely goes against, hell, it goes against the American ideal. It's like, no, you have to stop and build backdoors into everything in case we want to look. That's Russia, circa 1950.
And the requirement of a plain text file of it, that defeats the purpose of the encryption. Because how are they going to get the plain text file? Oh, yeah, it's going to be emailed to whatever company it's supposed to go to.
So tech giants are resisting. I think I already read that. Encryption serves a valuable purpose. It's a foundational element of data security and essential to safeguarding data against cyber attacks. It is critical to the growth and flourishing of the digital economy, and we have to support it. I support strong and responsible encryption, he said. What the fuck is responsible encryption? I work in
encryption
security.
That lets the government see it.
What the hell is responsible encryption? I don't understand the words that are coming out of his mouth. I simply maintain the company should retain the capability to provide the government unencrypted copies of communications and data stored on devices when a court orders them to do so. So, okay. Again, why is the company being ordered to do so? If the police wish to toss everything in my house looking for, I don't know, drugs or something, whatever they accuse me of.
Drugs of Jenkins.
Yeah, okay, you're looking for the Jenkins factory. God. Yeah, I got it for you right here, Bindo. God, I'm sorry. It's, you know, they're not going to go serve the warrant to the company that built the house I'm in. They might go serve it to the landlord, but generally they're going to serve it to me, walk in and start searching, right?
Yep.
So why with a computer or a cell phone are they going to go serve Apple or Google or Verizon or AT&T or whoever the fuck? Why wouldn't they again serve me, force me to unlock my phone and just take it? Why is the company involved at all? It's my device. You don't go after the company that makes your filing cabinets or your safes when you want to see what's in one of those. You issue a warrant and collect what's in them.
Generally, don't go after Ford when you want to search my car when I'm driving around.
That's a very good example. Yeah, thank you. So I guess I'm confused at the methodology they're taking here, because if they want to see what's on my phone, shouldn't they be serving the warrant to me and collecting my phone from me?
Here's the issue. We live in a world where the government doesn't want you to know they're searching. Patriot Act was kind of designed for secret searches of shit. So they want to search through Morps' crap without Morps knowing they're searching through Morps' crap. That's why they're going after companies. Now, it's immoral and it's wrong, and I personally believe it's unconstitutional, but until it gets challenged enough and the Supreme Court weighs in and hopefully weighs in correctly, it's going to keep happening.
Despite the fact that doing this would be a massive money and time suck in terms of storage capability and processing, it also takes kind of the point of using encrypted communication, or it kind of takes the point out of using encrypted communications for privacy. It also means that any hacker who breaks into these archives would have access to the crown jewels of personal and corporate secrets. Mind you, that would surely never happen. We've never come across stories about servers getting hacked, and certainly the government is immune from such incidents, especially when they involve staffers' fingerprints and security clearances. Equifax, oh, excuse me. I don't know where that came from. Equifax, oh, excuse me.
Odin?
You may want to get that looked at there, Maps.
Yeah, I seem to have a case of Equifax stuck in my throat. Rosenstein prefaced his suggestion with dire warnings about the effects of online crime. Since January 1 of last year, there have been an average of 4,000 ransomware attacks a day. They're called backups, people. They're not particularly hard, and if you know what you're doing, they're not even expensive. Up to 300% from the previous year. Well, yes, that would be because the attackers found something that's lucrative, and you know the old scam methods and blackmailing companies for their data isn't as effective as it used to be. And he said the FBI warned him ransomware infects more than 100,000 computers a day around the world. So ransomware is also using encryption, but they're criminals. So why would they respect the encryption laws? And since encryption is just math, you can go look up how to do it online. You know what? I'm gonna explain this poorly, but because I've been drinking most of the night. My boss told me I needed to drink more, so I've been taking her at her word. Okay, you want to know how to do encryption right now? There's a binary function called XOR. XOR, very simply, will flip a bit or not flip a bit based on the input string you give it. So you have a set of data, then you have an input string, and you XOR the two together, and that gets you your ciphertext. Now, the way you get your encryption string is you usually have a formula or an algorithm that's generating it. This could be things like triple des, blowfish, in the case of hashing, things like SHA. And so you'll give that algorithm a key, such as, say, your password. And the algorithm will take that key. Generally, it'll munge it up and do something to it to make it a little bit more complex and pad it out to the correct length. It then uses that to generate a ciphertext string, an encryption string. That string is then XORed with the data you're encrypting, producing random gibberish because there's no way to predict what it's going to be. So the way you get your plain text back out of it is you then, once again, provide the same function, the same key, and the decryption function, the same key, the same password. And this is for symmetric encryption, by the way. And you then XOR it again with the output of the key, and that flips all the bits back to what they originally were, giving you your plain text back. That's encryption, ladies and gentlemen. That's how you do it. There are different algorithms out there for doing it. It's fairly simple and not even all that computationally expensive. So what's to stop people who write ransomware from writing their own encryption routines? Now, generally, implementation of encryption can be done poorly, thus making it easy to predict keys and the like. But assuming that they, can look up the right formulas and such to recreate the libraries, or just go download the open source libraries for encryption that exist today. The ransomware people are not going to respect your requests for plain text copies and backdoors here, Mr. Government Jackass. So I don't know how allowing government backdoors into systems helps with this problem. Now, asymmetric encryption is a little bit different because you have two different formulas that produce matching keys. Anyways, the math on that gets a little bit, honestly, beyond me. So but basic encryption is not hard. Especially for any computer that has access to binary operations, which is all of them, because that's how they work. So you can't ban it. I don't know how to explain it. It's any clearer than that. You cannot ban encryption unless you ban the creation of unapproved software. So I don't know how you do that with the modern general purpose computer that we have today. I guess that would be banning the general purpose computer, and you're only allowed to have tablets, and you have to be licensed for anything more than like an iPad. That would suck. Let's see. Scary news. Runtime warned that botnets commandeered Internet of Things devices. God, whoever wrote this is dumb. Is the author's name on this article? Ian Thompson in San Francisco. Ian, read a book. For God's sake. Botnets are not just Internet of Things. Could end up crashing large chunks of the Internet. Speaking of crashing, he also warned that hackers could launch devastating attacks against autonomous cars that could leave passengers injured or... For God's sake, how is a botnet going to attack an autonomous car? You have to get in range of the freaking CAN bus. Fuck's sake. Yeah, this article is pissing me off. More just because the guy who wrote it doesn't know what he's talking about. He said that some CEOs have told him that they were reluctant to report hacking attacks to the authorities. Runstein said that he understood those concerns, but that it was vital for businesses to get in touch with so that the perpetrators could be stopped from using the same attacks against others. Okay, you know what? That one's actually true. If you do get hacked, you should report it to the authorities so that you could at least try to prosecute them if they're in the States. Most of the time, they're not, and attribution is hard, but you know what? It's probably not a bad idea to actually get... many cyber attacks are directed by foreign governments. No, not as many as you think. When you are up against military or intelligence services of foreign nation state, you should have the federal government in your corner. But they won't be in your corner. They suck. They don't even have... New York judge has flat out said that police officers don't have a duty to protect. I don't expect the government to actually help. I'm just by alerting law enforcement about a cyber incident, your organization performs as public service. It helps strengthen the cyber defenses of others. This is, by the way, is the same guy who said that there's never been a right to absolute privacy in the United States.
Except for the Fourth Amendment.
Well, you know.
Yeah, but just ignore that one.
Yeah, well, you know, it's inconvenient. So I actually do understand where he's coming from. Because if you're on the other side of an investigation and you keep hitting a black hole like encrypted drives, encrypted communication, no way to decrypt it, no keys, it does become very difficult to do attribution. Attribution really is hard. The problem is he's in a position of power and he's describing this data apocalypse or surveillance state utopia, where you have no privacy on anything electronic whatsoever because it inconveniences them and makes their job harder. And, you know, I'm going to badly paraphrase the quote. I think Jefferson said it, but isn't it better to let an innocent man go free than to punish, or isn't it better to let a guilty man go free than punish an innocent one?
Yes. Somewhat accurate. I think it's better to let 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be chained.
And was that Jefferson?
We'll go with that because I don't want to look it up. So yes.
Okay, fair enough. So, yeah, I'm misremembering the quote, obviously, but yeah, our legal system was designed around the idea that you should only, you know, you have to be proven guilty first, and this is absolutely a violation of the concepts of the Fourth Amendment, if not the outright words. And for God's sakes, get some people in office who understand this stuff before they start making pronouncements about how it should be implemented.
And understand what he's asking for. He's literally asking for all of my bank records and all of my medical records.
Just in case.
Be open,
they might need it.
To the public, effectively. If there's a back door, it's not encrypted anymore. And if you're saying, we're just going to have a repository of plain text, what you're saying is, hi, the target is over here.
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly what you're saying. So, following that up, I got this article from Tech Dirt. BlackBerry CEO promises to try to break customers' encryption if the U.S. government asks him to. The DOJ's reps, along with the new FBI boss, keep making noises about device encryption. They don't like it. What they want is some hybrid unicorn called responsible encryption, which would keep bad guys out but let law enforcement in. Okay, how is the encryption supposed to know who is good and who is bad? That's the whole... I mean, that's what hackers do, is they lie to machines.
No, you don't lie. You don't lie to a machine. They're such nice things. You're always honest. I'm Bob. The machine knows I'm Bob. Let me have Bob's money, machine.
No, I'm perfectly comfortable lying to machines. That's how I do my job. Because, you know, it's much easier to convince them than I'm convinced Phil from Accounting's computer that I'm Phil, you know, because Phil's password is Trump 2016, is fairly easy to guess. So there's that.
Please tell me you gave Phil an email not to use that.
Well, his name wasn't actually Phil, and I did make sure he changed it. So, but yeah, Phil was fairly high placed in this particular company, and had access to all kinds of funds. Anyways, yeah, people use shitty passwords, so I just lie to the computer and tell them that I'm them, and it gives me whatever I want. They're inanimate objects. I'm perfectly comfortable lying to them. So, anyways, responsible encryption, which would keep the bad guys out and let law enforcement in. The government has no idea how this is supposed to be accomplished, but it has decided to leave that up to the smart guys at tech companies. Hey, we want this. Go make it. You know, hey, tech weenies, just go make it. Just make this happen. Yeah, fuck you. Fuck
your
mother.
We want something that uses infinite amounts of money. Can you do that for us?
Yeah, it's like, oh, we don't care what this costs. You're going to do it.
Yep. Yeah, that's on the project burner right after the gold printing machine. Not going to print money, because that's going to be worthless. I'm going to be printing actual gold. See, we feed human feces in this end. Gold sprouts out the other. It's amazing.
But you're not supposed to say that, madman. Now they're going to know there's an infinite supply of gold in the market is going to drop.
Mm-mm. No, not true. Gold as a metal has a use as an electrical conductor and as a fountain pen tip. So even if we can make a damn near infinite supply of it by feeding fat guys burritos and then taking the output and putting that in Madman's gold press, you can still put it to use. It still has a use. We have a damned near unlimited supply of aluminum. Aluminum still has a value.
Yes, but the value of aluminum is nowhere near the value of gold currency. Gold, it will still drop quite a bit. It will still be worth something. It'll probably be a tenth or so of the current price, though.
As long as it's worth more than shit, I'm good. That's what we're going for. Since I'm making it out of shit, it needs to be worth more than human feces.
Well, you should be safe on that aspect.
Oh, fuck!
Let's see. There's one cell phone company that has been conspicuously absent from these discussions. A lot of that conspicuous absence has to do with its conspicuous absence from the cell phone market. Pretty much relegated to government and enterprise use, BlackBerry has been offering encrypted messaging for years, but it's been offering a different sort of encryption, one it can remove if needed. Yeah, BlackBerry had some security problems a few years ago, right before the iPhone came out. Yeah, it was kind of a perfect punch that knocked them out of the market. Enterprise users hold their own encryption keys, but individual nobodies have their... Oh, okay, so if you don't have... Yeah, if you're not running a BlackBerry server, your encryption keys are held by BlackBerry. BlackBerry would like to be held up as the responsible encryption poster boy by the DOJ if it only held enough market share to make an actual difference. Instead, it's kind of limited to use by the DOJ and the FBI. That doesn't mean BlackBerry isn't willing to submit multiple hype bids whenever government says jump. Over the past couple of years, it has come to light BlackBerry routinely decrypts messages for inquiring governments. Apparently, there's some sort of golden key law, or golden key law enforcement can use to access communications. One multiple governments seem to have access to.
That's kind of the reason why Hillary got crapped on for taking her BlackBerry to Moscow.
There are still some unanswered questions about enterprise accounts, the ones that BlackBerry doesn't hold the keys to. This poses the same problem for law enforcement that other more popular phones do, but rather than point out the problems with the government's demands for responsible encryption, BlackBerry has irresponsibly chosen to proclaim its willingness to hack into its own customers' devices if the government asks. CEO John Chen, speaking at a Q&A during the BlackBerry Security Summit in London on Tuesday, claimed it wasn't so simple for BlackBerry to crack its own protections. Only when the government gives us a court order will we start tracking it. The question is, how good is the encryption? Today's encryption has gotten to the point where it's rather difficult, even for ourselves, to break it. To break our own encryption, it's not an entirely breakable thing, or it's not an easily breakable thing. We'll only ever attempt that if we have the right court order. The fact that we will honor the court order doesn't imply we could actually do it. Yeah, this came at the same time that he was asserting that their protections were better than Apple's, and its version of the Android operating system was more secure than the one offered by its competitors. This proactive hacking offer may be pointed in the future by DOJ and FBI officials as evidence Apple and the rest aren't doing enough to cooperate with U.S. law enforcement. Of course, Chen's willingness to try doesn't guarantee the company can actually decrypt the communications of certain users. Well, if they know how their keys are generated, they have a big leg up on trying to guess the keys because, a little hint, people, when you're trying to crack encryption and you know that the implementation of encryption is good, you're not actually trying to crack the encryption. You're trying to crack the key. And since BlackBerry owns the software that generates those keys, and I'm assuming that their engineers documented it somewhere. Yeah, right, engineers don't do that. So potentially they could figure out like a range of what keys to test, so they could reduce the amount of brute forcing they have to do significantly compared to somebody coming at it blind. Does that mean BlackBerry can hack their own encryption? No. But they're certainly in a better position to do so than anybody else. So, yeah, the government's coming for your encryption, people. But it's so easy to write your... I mean, it's so easy to implement and go out and find... Don't invent your own algorithms. Don't write your own encryption. I should preface that. That's like a key thing. Never try to write your own encryption. Don't like make it up. But if you want to write your own implementation of Blowfish or TripleDes or any a more modern implementation or AES or that's not a modern implementation. Brain fart. I'm not thinking of modern encryption schemes. I keep thinking of stuff that's like 10 years old. Doesn't matter. If you want to look up the how to implement these things and write your own implementation, I mean, the math is kind of public. So, I mean, good luck for banning the encryption. It's sort of like telling people you're not allowed to decrypt DVDs. The key's a number. I mean, they were printing it on T-shirts, for God's sake. So
this is kind of a separate thing. If they're not putting a back door, but offering to break their own encryption if ordered. I don't see them doing something wrong. I do still think that you should be giving the warrant to whoever owns the BlackBerry, and then if they fail to comply, go to BlackBerry and ask, "Hi, try to break this for us."
Well, it still comes back to that what you were talking about before, that they don't want whatever company to know they're trying to surveil them, because you're right. It would be, I mean, in this case, you could actually go and give a warrant to the company saying, "We need the decryption keys from your server. We're going to send this technician from BlackBerry who's going to recover them. And if you try to impede them, our cops are going to shoot you." But, you know, then the company knows that you've just lost all your keys. So I guess they could order that company. But I mean, that's your direct, that would be your, like your direct employer if they're going after you. So, I don't know. I much prefer if they're trying to collect data and they're trying to do it in such a manner that they require access to your computing devices, that they should serve the warrant to you and collect the device. I mean, for God's sake, if they need something on my laptop, they're not going to go to... I guess Mark Shuttleworth, because I don't know where Ubuntu would go to get access to my laptop, but, you know, it's got Ubuntu on it. So if you would just come in and grab the laptop. You wouldn't be going to Canonical and saying, we need access to Morpse's laptop.
Oh, no, you'd go to Toshiba. Come on.
But it's a ThinkPad. Why would you go to Toshiba for a ThinkPad?
It's the government. We're going to Toshiba.
It's like, no, it's not even a ThinkPad I bought from Toshiba. I bought it from eBay.
Oh God! Don't bring them into it. You know how many people are going to get warned now? eBay has dozens of people selling shit on there.
And technically, it was two laptops that I bought broken. Well, no, not this one. That was a different laptop. This one I just bought one ThinkPad and fixed it. But that's not. By the way, anybody looking to get cheap laptops, go get broken ones on eBay. It's a lot cheaper if you know how to fix them. A lot of times, if the battery's bad, they'll sell it as busted, and it turns out batteries are really easy to fix. This one was sold as broken because it was missing a latch. Well, the latch was on the battery. I bought a new battery for $20, and this one was like 90% way to good. After that, it just needed some RAM and some other fixes. But the screen on this one was actually not busted, which is rare. Usually, you got to. You can buy the cheap ones that have a busted screen and then replace the screen, but that's not hard either. So, yeah. Anyways, you can spend some time online and find the models that are easy to swap the screens on and shit like that, and you can actually get a fairly nice machine for, I think I've got all of $100 in that ThinkPad, and it's actually a pretty badass ThinkPad. So, it's got like an i5, 8 gigs of RAM in it, that one's got 8 gig. So,
I do kind of like that, Sakuros. They want spies, not cops.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I think that's a really good way to put it. So, I think he's exactly right. They want to spy on people. They don't want to have to actually do police work and investigations. And that's sad. I think we're also we might be conflating a couple different parts of the government, but at the end of the day, it's all still a government. So let's go on to this one. This article is from the New York Post. Cord cutting, or at least the speed at which people are ditching pay TV, is on track to be the biggest upset of the year. There's finally a collection of cheapish streaming services widely available, and as you imagine, people are jumping ship from cable as fast as humanly possible. The latest bad data points come from the Q3 earnings of the big cable companies, which are now mostly public. DSL reports added up the damage it makes for bad reading if you're a cable company exec. Only 5 of the 7 biggest pay TV providers have released their third quarter subscriber data, but collectively these companies saw a net loss of 632,000 pay TV subscribers during the period, 385,000 for AT&T and DirecTV, 125,000 for Comcast, 104,000 for Charter, and 18,000 for Verizon Fios, DSL wrote. When you add in the unreported numbers from Dish and Altice? Don't know that company name. The number will be near as makes no difference 1 million subscribers. To put that in perspective, a survey suggested last year there were around 16 million cord cutters in the U.S., adding another million to that in Q3 alone, just how fast the industry is changing. Cable TV companies are struggling to adapt. AT&T is a prime example. The company has successfully launched DirecTV Now, one of the better internet-only streaming services, but the base package is $40, way less than the $100 that families traditionally spend on a cable bundle. Worse, AT&T is giving away DirecTV Now for $10 to wireless subscribers, meaning it's not making them any real money at the moment. Fundamentally, the market is transitioning from a series of regional monopolies to a competitive national market. You can already buy streaming TV from AT&T, YouTube, Hulu, Fubo, or Sling, and those services are available in most markets nationwide. It's no coincidence that $40 a month is the standard price for about 50 channels. That's about what it costs to sell the service, plus minor overheads for technology and customer service. Streaming TV is going to mean cheaper TV. So, yeah, the cable companies are losing their minds over this cord-cutting stuff, and just the numbers are getting worse for them. The only problem is that most of the internet's providers are also the cable companies. So, again, with the regional monopolies, they've got no reason to treat their customers any better, and they just harangue you trying to get you to add services. I'm pretty sure I get an ad to add TV, or get something in the mail at least twice a week to add something to try to get me to add TV again. And all I do is internet, of course. And yeah, I wish I could get better internet because my service is not that great, and I'm not happy with it. And I've made no secret of that. Charter sucks. Well, I guess it's Spectrum now. But yeah, Spectrum sucks.
Yes, they do.
They don't route well. They don't give a shit about their customers. And they have no competition out here, so I don't have an alternative. I mean, I guess I could tether off my phone, but, I mean, that's not going to work for very long.
And there's another thing cable companies have been doing. They're just raising the price of internet.
Yeah, they are.
Yep.
The cable internet package I started with where I live was around $15 a month. It's $45 now.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
It's also a little faster now, but still, $15 to $45.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, so you're only going to subscribe to this? Well, we're going to charge you the same because we still have to get our pound of flesh. Unless you want to bundle cable TV, in which case, well, half the time the bundles are cheaper. It's like, what the? How does that work? Like, literally, it's like it's cheaper for them to add like a basic cable package than it is to just sell you internet straight up. Now, that's not the case where I live. They keep bugging me to, I think the only reason they stopped calling me is because I acted incredibly racist on the phone to get put on their abuse list. Being asked to put on a do not call list does bupkis. Get on the abuse list. They leave you alone.
Yeah. When it switched over to Spectrum is when they stopped that, Morps. I have no problem saying where I live, it used to be Time Warner. Time Warner gave me a discount for bundling cable, which is why I had cable television. When it switched over, that discount went away, and they upped the price of my cable package. Both my cable TV package and my internet package.
Yep, they've got to get their pound of flesh, and because they've got regional monopolies. My God, could you imagine if there was actually competition in the space and they had to treat their customers like people?
Oh, it'd be great.
I mean, but seriously, internet should not be $40 a month. It just shouldn't be, unless you're like getting like some kind of a high-end package, like you're running servers or something. I mean, your average, you know, a hundred up and down ought to be nothing. It's just fucking copper. It's not even that much bandwidth. But they haven't updated their infrastructure since, you know, like, what, 2000.
Well, why should they improve their system? It's still good.
Well, it works, but, I mean, that's the problem, is that, you know, you go look at it. Cell providers. Oh yeah, Cycros is saying cell phone providers could fill the gap, and yeah, I mean it's possible, especially because they're bringing unlimited plans back. I've actually did some testing with tethering my phone, and it worked, but not as well as I needed to work. So, and you know they still like having, so like I have unlimited data, but if I use more than 14 gig, they can rate limit me and slow it way the hell down. So.
Oh, if I did cell phone, I wouldn't do the tethering to my phone. They actually sell routers in the internet service.
Oh yeah,
it's just it's more expensive than my cable.
Yeah, yeah, that's the real problem, is that you need to have decent signal and you need to have enough speed to make it viable, and you know the pricing on it's still a lot higher than it should be. But hell, at least with cell phones, at least there's competition in the space, even if it's only a handful of companies. I guess that's the only reason that plans aren't retardedly expensive. Because, I mean, seriously, I talk to people at work all the time whose cable bill is routinely $300.
Oh, that is retarded. I would not pay that much.
Well, I mean, they're getting movie channels and, you know, servicing, like, the faster internet and all this other stuff. But it's just like, dude. It should not cost that much Especially given all the ads and shit on those services. I mean, come on. But they're not. It's just what it is. So, no competition. They can do that kind of shit. Next article is from ZDNet. Microsoft put out a tweet. I want to say October 31st. Yeah, okay. Here it is. 40% of the operating systems that are running in Azure virtual machines. So I guess for anybody who doesn't know, Microsoft offers cloud computing service similar to Google and Amazon. And they call it Azure. And you can spin up virtual machines in Microsoft's cloud. And 40% of the virtual machines in Microsoft's cloud are running Linux. So the status courtesy of a tweet on October 31st from Microsoft developer from the Microsoft Developer UK account. The tweet, hashtagged as Future Decoded, seemingly is connected to information that Microsoft officials shared at the company's conference in London today. Community manager Brian Brine retweeted the Microsoft Developer UK tweet, adding only 40%. Come on, it's more than that. Well, duh. So when you're running when you're developing application servers, most of the time, most people are writing in things like Java, Python, PHP. A lot of these application platforms are actually operating system agnostic. I mean, there's some differences based on the operating systems, but there's not. If you're writing a web app, there's not any real compelling reason to run it on a Windows server. The only reason you would is if you need to hook into something that's Windows only, and there's not a good way to do it. But even then, usually that component can run on a Windows server, and you use Linux servers for everything else. Because with containerization and systems automations, it just doesn't make sense to have to license every fucking OS that you use. And to spin up a Windows server, one step of it is getting it licensed. So with Linux machines, you can spin up 100 machines for basically for free. You don't even have to license the OS. Run them for however long and then destroy them at the end. And with Windows, if you try doing that, you're going to run afoul of the licensing pretty damned quick. So, yeah, of course they're running Azure. Of course, half the fucking VMs up there are Linux, because that's the modern paradigm when it comes to doing application development in the web. And again, there's not any real major advantage to running a web server on Windows. I guess if you wrote it in .NET, but even then you can run a lot of the .NET code on Linux nowadays too, like Mono, and Microsoft themselves are helping to support some .NET stuff on Linux. So, I mean, I just don't know of a compelling reason. I guess the database servers, a lot of people like MS SQL, but even then that's a different server. That's not the application server. So, Microsoft launched Azure on October 27th, 2008. Then Chief Software Architect Ray Ozzie recently reminded the author on Twitter, when Microsoft first launched Azure, it was purely a platform as a service play. Microsoft added infrastructure as a service to its cloud platform in 2012 and added Linux support at that time. Microsoft currently supports a variety of Linux flavors on Azure, including CentOS, CoreOS, Debian, Oracle, Red Hat, SUSE, OpenSUSE, and Ubuntu. You know, I forgot SUSE and OpenSUSE were separate things. Oh, shit. Anyways, yesterday Microsoft noticed that Azure customers creating VMs in their labs can now opt for a Kali Linux image. Oh, that's fantastic. Microsoft is supporting Kali. Yeah, Kali is Debian drive designed for digital forensics and penetration testing. Anybody who doesn't know what Kali is, it used to be called Backtrack. A lot of people run Kali because it's got a lot of scripts and Metasploit already set up. Not that setting up Metasploit is all that hard, but, sometimes you just don't have time to deal with it, and it's fairly quick to get it going on a Kali Linux. It's usually faster just to grab a Kali ISO than it is to actually try to get Metasploit up and working on your random distro. So, yeah, usually you need different libraries and shit like that. So,
I want to check that. Bill Gates' phone now runs Linux.
Yeah, I think he does use an Android phone. Well, Microsoft quit making Windows phones. They basically abandoned mobile platform, or they basically abandoned phones as a platform, even though there's still several Microsoft phones floating around. Not a lot of people ever used them. I'm aware of two people at the company I work at who used Windows phones, and neither one of them do today. One got an Android, the other got an iPhone. So, yeah.
I didn't upgrade a phone at that time because, you know, the way I treat phones. Were they bad phones or just bad marketing?
A combination. They were using that Live Tiles crap from Windows 8. There were Windows 10 phones. Microsoft's basically dropped them, and all the people who were making them are now doing Android phones. But the other big problem they had is they just couldn't get the software buy-in. You know, Android and iOS just had too much of a head start. So there just wasn't much there in the way of apps, which is kind of the big selling point of phones nowadays. Is you know, getting all the apps on your phone, and they're just
didn't happen.
You ever look through the Windows Store on a Windows 10 machine? There's not really a lot there that looks great. Most of it looks like cash grab developer fodder. So it's like we threw this shit together in .NET in 15 minutes and threw it on the Windows Store. Give us $5, you know. Or, you know, the standard, you know, we spent $100 in the Unity what's it called? The marketplace, asset marketplace. And, you know, quickly threw together a zombie game with the same 5 zombie models you've seen in every other game. And, you know, that's worth $20, right? So, but, yeah, I don't remember ever hearing anybody rooting them either. So I don't know how much you could actually do with them. And rooting the phone was a huge selling point for the early Android handsets. Not only, you don't really need to do it today. A lot of the stuff you were doing with rooted phones is now kind of supported, but you still can, and a lot of people still do. So you can do things like rooting and, you know, running custom ROMs and shit like that. And, you know, of course, people jailbreak their iPhones too. Not that that was ever a huge selling point for iPhones, but you can do it. Usually the selling point for iPhone is the marketing and the whole, you know, the concept that Apple has managed to sell that if you have an iPhone, you'll get laid.
Damn it. I'll have to change to iPhones.
I said that they've managed to sell, not that it was real.
Damn it. I'm going to use the difference that I would have spent on my iPhone and get a hooker.
You'd probably get two, considering the phones you normally use. Next article up is from the CIA.
Wait a minute.
Words I never thought I would say on Pure Decking.
Were they hacked? Please tell me they were hacked.
No, they have released an index that you can go download of like 470,000 files that were recovered in the 2011 raid on Osama bin Laden's compound. So a lot of his audio recordings, video, journals, all basically a whole bunch of the files they pulled off of his computer when they raided his compound in 2011, they've published a lot of it. The reason I wanted to read this is hilarious. With today's release, the information remaining in the Abbottabad collection that has not been released publicly includes materials which are sensitive, such as that their release would directly damage efforts to keep the nation secure, materials protected by copyright, pornography, malware, and blank corrupted or duplicate files. For example, some of the material being withheld from public release are the following copyrighted videos. These are videos that Osama bin Laden had on his laptop when they raided his compound. Ants, Batman Gotham Knight, BBC Great Wildlife Moments, the biography of Osama bin Laden, Cars, Chicken Little, CNN presents the world's most wanted, Final Fantasy VII, Heroes of Tomorrow, Home on the Range, Ice Age: Dawn of the Dinosaurs. It's like he's got, you know, In the Footsteps of Bin Laden, National Geographic, Kung Fu Killers. It's like all these children's movies and then documentaries about him.
I like the last one. Where in the world is Osama bin Laden?
Yeah, there's like the Three Musketeers, the Kremlin from the Inside, Storm Rider, Clash of the Evils, Resident Evil, Peru civilization, National Geographic, world's worst vermin. Okay, now we all know that this list was edited by some intern at the CIA to be hilarious. But this almost could have gone in decking. In all seriousness, you can actually go into the folder, and you can download. It's kicked me out. I was looking at it earlier. You can actually download videos and audios that they have from his machine, like him practicing his speeches and journals and stuff like that. So if you're one of these people who does like video remixing or makes, you know, cut up audio or stuff like that, or does, I can think of any number of uses for this shit with YouTube. This stuff is all copyright free.
Oh, we can make us set this to music, maybe run it through auto-tune, but Osama bin Laden saying Allah's an infidel and should be hanged.
Not to mention, if you're a conspiracy theory nut, there's content in here for you for weeks. So, this is more just of the public service announcement. Have fun going through these files. Where's RU when we need him? He would be going through this stuff like a madman.
He'd be halfway through it by now.
Yeah, he would. So, anyways. Next up is kind of a funny article from Motherboard. Samsung is getting creative with old phones. Smartphones are ubiquitous, but smartphone habits are as diverse as the people using them. The author likes to buy flagship devices, such as the iPhone X or the Pixel 2, and then use it for 4 or 5 years. Others buy into upgrade plans with their carrier that lets them change out their phone every year. But lots of people still buy a phone, keep it for a year or two, then buy a new one, and their old phone ends up in a closet, shoebox, or a nightstand. Many people save these old phones in case of an emergency, but the vast majority of them never get used again and eventually become worthless. The phone in the closet phenomenon has become a hidden store of e-waste. A two-year-old phone still has value and is still a powerful device. So it's great news that Samsung is starting a new upcycling initiative that is designed to turn old smartphones, take old smartphones and turn them into something brand new. Behold, he has a picture of a Bitcoin mining rig made out of 40 Galaxy S5s, which runs a new operating system Samsung developed for its upcycling initiative. In other words, they probably just put a plain old Linux distro on it. They took 40 old S5s and actually made a Bitcoin mining rig that rivals an i7 desktop, an older i7 desktop, but still. Samsung premiered this rig and a bunch of other cool uses for old phones at its recent developers conference in San Francisco. Upcycling involves repurposing old devices instead of breaking them down for parts or reselling them. The people at Samsung C-Lab, an engineering team dedicated to creative projects, showed off old Galaxy phones and assorted tablets stripped of Android and repurposed into a variety of different objects. The team hooked 40 old Galaxy F5s together to make a Bitcoin mining rig. Repurposed an old Galaxy tablet into an Ubuntu-powered laptop, used a Galaxy S3 to monitor a fish tank, and programmed an old phone with facial recognition software to guard the entrance of a house in the form of an owl. Why form of an owl? Well, whatever. Samsung declined to answer specific questions about the Bitcoin mining rig, but information sheet at the developers' conference noted that 8 Galaxy S5 devices can mine at a greater power efficiency than a standard desktop computer. Not that many people are mining Bitcoin on their desktops, which is true, because CPU mining for Bitcoin is kind of like pissing into the ocean and hoping you're going to change its color. It's all very cool, and Samsung plans to release both the software it used to unlock the phones as well as various plans for projects for online for free. This initiative, this innovative platform provides an environmentally responsible way for old Galaxy mobile devices to breathe new life, providing new possibilities and potentially extended value for devices that might otherwise be forgotten in desk drawers or discarded. Robin Schultz, spokesperson for Samsung, told the author in an email. So they go on talking about how great upcycling is because it keeps the phones out of the trash. And they have a placeholder GitHub page with a video explaining the process. But it sounds like they swap out Android for a generic Linux, and then they can run... if it's Linux, you know, you can probably run Python, Perl, whatever, and maybe Scratch And that way they can reuse these old phones as other devices, like they're using the camera to monitor fish tanks. I know a couple of people that I work with that took a handful of old phones that they were able to get on eBay for cheap and made security systems out of them. You know, self-contained battery, Wi-Fi, and, you know, fairly decent cameras. So that makes perfect sense. And that's apparently even a fairly common practice is to grab old phones and use them to run security cameras. So
how do they charge the battery in it?
Well, it's still wired. I mean, you still got to plug it up somewhere. But I mean, you're just running a 5-volt line, so it's just a, you know, old phone charger and a long USB cord, right? Or, you know, you can get creative with the power lines and find some way to get 5 volts to the thing. But believe me, 5 volts is not hard to produce. 5 volts DC is not hard to produce to get to a phone to keep it running. And a lot of the moderately newer ones actually have wireless charging built into them, so you might be able to come up with something, you know, some kind of radiating power throughout the house. Maybe not that. That sounds dangerous. But, yeah, Cycross is mentioning there's an app on Android that actually does the security camera thing with old devices. That's what most of them are using. If I remember the name, I'd mention it, but I don't. So,
my favorite old cell phone story so far. They've been turned into a satellite.
Yeah, that makes sense.
A communication satellite and tossed up in space.
Why not? It's got cameras, some radios, some telemetry stuff, because, I mean, most of them can tell how they're oriented. Why not? Alfred? That actually sounds right, Cycross. I wasn't paying a hell of a lot of attention when he was talking. So, I don't know. BSV, I know you got some old phones laying around. What do you do with yours?
My old phones? That was broken apart. I was just seeing what I could dig out of it.
What's in here?
I get bored. Stuff comes apart. Sometimes goes back together.
You know, I still have an old S3 floating around somewhere with a busted screen. I even have the replacement screen for it. I just never bothered to do it. And now it's not even really worth doing, you know? So,
yeah,
Oh, go ahead, BSV.
Yeah, I think the main thing of why didn't use it for anything. Taking it apart, I accidentally ripped the ribbon connecting to the screen.
Yeah, I've done that on a couple of devices. I actually had a HP Palm Top, little color screen device, ran like Windows CE2, and it was still. This was when they were still shaped like laptops before they went for the palm form factor that would later become the iPhone. And it was having some internal problems, so I thought, oh, I'll just pop this open and touch up the solder points and make this thing work nice again. Yeah, there was a ribbon cable in that hinge. Damn it! You know, I've done that. So, yeah, actually, some of these devices are old enough they could have, like, the caps going bad and shit like that. So, although there's not a lot with the you know, the actual electrolytic capacitors in them anymore, but, yeah. Actually, what'll happen to a lot of them is they'll get flexed, and the circuit board will get cracks in it. So it'll start losing traces. Which, if you can figure out what traces are damaged, you can usually get some like magnet wire and actually fix it. And of course, you got to be really good with the soldering iron and really good at following traces to do that on some of these really small circuit boards. But I've touched up a circuit board here and there. I've got a old set of speakers that I need to throw away that the circuit board inside of it got cracked in half because they may have fallen down a set of stairs when I was moving into an apartment 2 decades ago. And, you know, they got opened up and just, you know, jumper wires ran all over that board to make it work again. Pain in the ass and took forever with the continuity setting on a multimeter, but there's no reason you couldn't do it with a phone. And I imagine phones get flexed more than anything, because people's pockets sat on, shit like that. So, anyways, I like the idea of, you know, grabbing a whole bunch of old cell phones off eBay and turning them into a Bitcoin miner, though. So, I don't know how much money you'd make with it, but it's fun. Yo! That is the wrong digital dojo. I totally loaded the wrong Digital Dojo sound effect. Digital Dojo New. Yeah, that's wrong. Let's play the correct one. I need to make a new Digital Dojo track, too. Anyways, so a couple things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is a script called Crack Detector. And this is kind of specialized. It's really meant for people who are using some sort of a Linux-based device as the router. So if you've blown out the firmware on your router and you've got like a DDWRT or something else that's using host APD, something that is using the Linux the Linux access point software. This is a Python 2 script that doesn't need any external modules. That actually will monitor your Wi-Fi for people attempting to use the crack exploit and just kick them off your network. Kind of hacky, pretty cool. Unfortunately, you got to have the right kind of router that's like a Linux machine that you've built and is running this, or you've got like a DDWRT or Tomato based device, something where you've loaded a firmware that's Linux based on it. So, because you need the ability, it has to use this host APD and it has to run Python. It's kind of a limited set. In your average home router, it's kind of useless. But if you've if you're running a custom firmware or you've got a high end device that's running a full on Linux as your Wi-Fi access point, this is a great script for watching for that. Especially if you've got stuff that they're not gonna patch. Like for a fact, like old cell phones, like we were just talking about, they're not gonna patch the crack exploit on them because they're gonna tell you to buy a new phone. Same thing with old iPhones. Same thing with consoles and radios and stereos and TVs and shit. Stuff that's never going to get a firmware update. The manufacturer will just tell you to buy a new one if you call them saying, you want this fixed. So, and I guess neither one of you is following the crack exploit. So,
no, but I'm kind of wondering, is there a way to do a false positive on that?
Oh, and turn it into a denial of service? Oh, I'm sure there is. Probably just running one of the scripts that tests whether you're vulnerable to crack or not will set the thing off. Of course, all you're doing is DDoSing yourself, but hey, whatever. And then finally, I found this interesting website, Security in a Box, Digital Tools and Tactics. I'm thinking I may have linked this in the past, but I don't remember it. So, I could have milked this for Digital Dojo for weeks, but instead I'm just going to post the whole thing. It's got a full write-up on tactics, protecting devices from malware, protecting your information from physical threats, how to use secure passwords, sensitive files on the computer, how to destroy sensitive information, how to use mobile phones securely, and it's a bunch of theory articles mostly. But then you start getting into Linux, basic security for Linux, KeePassX for Linux, Veracrypt for Linux. So you actually start getting into some more useful guides. And they've got them for Windows, KeePass for Windows, Veracrypt for Windows, Firefox with security add-ons, and so on and so forth. Corbane Backup for Windows. Mac guides, again, KeePass and Veracrypt. Android Signal, basic Android security setup guide. Some basic stuff on the webs using OpenPGP and RiseUp Secure Email Service and so forth. So a lot of good articles here. If you're like a lot of the stuff I talk about, if you're confused by it or you know you should be doing a little bit better on your SecOps, but you don't really know how or just not sure what to Google, this is a great place to start.
Never thought of really unsecure ways of using your cellular phone.
Tons of them. Just install random apps off the Play Store and let them steal your shit. That's probably number one.
Okay.
I mean, an Android phone is basically a computer. I mean, it's not basically a computer. It's a computer. An Android phone is a computer. An iPhone is a computer, too. It just runs a version of BSD. BSD, not BSV.
Run on a cell phone, that sounds like a lot of work.
So anyways, these tutorials are pretty basic but a good place to start. and at least give you, get you thinking, give you something to work towards of different ways of, you know, how to operate securely. Because really, it's not about, oh, go download these three apps and make sure you use them for your email and your messaging, and now you're secure. Well, no, you're secure for now. It's, what you really need to understand is the concepts. You need to understand how to recognize whether an app is secure or not. You know, if you use Android and you go to download an app and the Play Store comes up and says, oh, it needs all these permissions, you know, maybe look at the permissions and say, does it make sense? Like, I'll have tons of games or different apps on my phone that, you know, I start to download it and it comes up and says, this needs permission to manage your calls. Why does a slot machine game need permission to manage my calls? I don't think I'm going to install this. Or
this needs permission to turn on your GPS.
Yeah. Actually, my favorite was I've been wanting to look into some different Android development, so I found an app that was supposed to show you, you know, you'd be kind of a reference card app for Kotlin. And I went to download it. And remember, this is supposed to be reference cards. So that's like, you know, some text referencing a programming language. And this thing wanted permission to view my photos, manage my calls, manage my contacts, access the internet, turn on the GPS. Well, I think it said manage radios. What else did it say? But, I mean, it was like every permission under the sun this thing was asking for. It's like, no. It's like, for something I could accomplish with a PDF just as easily as an app, yeah, no. Now, you know, if you're downloading something that says it's supposed to manage your pictures, and when you go to install it and says it needs to access your pictures, hey, that makes sense. So, you know, it's no big deal. So it's more about, you know, it's like, oh, if anything ever says it needs to manage my phone calls and my text messages, then I'm not going to install that. Well, if the app is supposed to manage your messages, it makes perfect sense that it can touch those things, you know? But so it's about learning to evaluate that and think a little bit more critically about what these things need, not just always going next, 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 yes, 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 whatever. You know, that was the bad thing about UAC and Windows 7 and up, is it trained you just to click on yes to everything. So anyways, that's all I've really got for tonight. I was worried it was going to be a short show, but we actually did pretty good on the discussion, especially the talked about the lead stories a little bit longer than I thought we would. So, BSV, closing thoughts.
I'm not good with this.
It's not playing the oh fuck sound. Why is it not playing the oh fuck sound?
Oh fuck!
There it goes. Madman, closing thoughts.
The FBI and CIA director would like you to post all of your personal credentials on Facebook in the default settings for ease of use for national security purposes. Don't worry. They told all the bad people not to use Facebook for the next week and a half. You should be fine. Hands
I don't know why we're assuming that the FBI is Hanzo in this case, but that's whatever.
Because we're not entirely certain what it was meant, but it was obviously an insult.
That's all I've... Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. And whereas we don't necessarily encourage insults, we also very much don't encourage Hanzo players.
That's all I got. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday, or at least most Thursdays. I'm not going to claim I haven't gotten sick or got pulled into work stuff or just, you know, really, really didn't feel like doing a show, which is pretty rare. But we try to do every Thursday. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit. And I noticed I had gotten some messages on Reddit earlier today. I think Psycho sent me a bunch of links, and I honestly did not get to look at them. So sorry about that. Hopefully you didn't send me something awesome that I should have been talking about tonight. But yeah, send me links on Reddit. I'll probably see them. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me, because Morps on Reddit somehow managed to get my handle. It actually pisses me off. I've noticed other people using Morps as a handle now. Like some guy in Sweden. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I'm not even sure where you got that.
Mopey Corpse, because I was playing an undead character in WoW. Like 20 years ago.
Okay, so that's where it came from. I knew it started out as your WoW character name, or a WoW character name. But I didn't
Mopey
know where
Corpse.
You pulled
I thought
it from.
It was funny. I mean, yeah. So, but yeah, I noticed other people using it lately, and it's like, I thought I had an original one here. What the fuck? So, anyways, so we're going to close out, and I found something hilarious in the sound folder, so I'm going to close out with some Alex Jones frogs here. I don't actually know where this came from. It was probably a YouTube video. If you just, you know, Google the Alex Jones frogs gay song, you'll find it.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the freaking frogs gay. Do you understand that? Turn the freaking frogs gay. Serious crap. Gay. Frogs, freaking frogs. It's not funny. I'm going to say it real slow for you. Gay. Frogs.
I just realized I forgot to read out the IRC. We have Sardonyx, who's probably not really there. BSV, Cykros, Iron Angel, Lowtech, and Madman, who actually was there.
I wasn't there.
BSV was not there. So, anyways, that's all we got for tonight. Later.